And the big problem we've got at the moment is that over the last sort of 30, 40 years, we've seen the wave climate increasing by about 0.4% per year on average, which isn't a lot. But when you accumulate that up, you're looking at 30, 40% increases in the overall wave energy in our oceans compared with when mid-19th century. When they break, they unleash a huge amount of power. It's very difficult or very unadvisable in many ways to try to stop the crest of a wave. It can be moving quite fast and it contains a lot of energy. So what natural reefs do and what we're trying to do is effectively simulate natural reefs.
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, presented by Sarani, and I'm your host, Vidya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring you brands that are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business adopts and employs sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. Today, we talk with Dr. William Bateman, founder and CEO of SeaCell, growing living reefs for coastal protection. Welcome, Dr. Bateman.
Thank you, Vidya, for inviting us to Mindful Business.
One of the changes that is very apparent in the present global warming and the climate change that we are experiencing is the disappearance of our beaches. How quickly, when you go to your favorite beach and 2 years later, you can see that the coastal lines have been washed away, they've receded. Do you have some statistics or some numbers for us?
From the work that we've done, we think about 51% of all beaches are actually receding. I mean, to counter that, you've got about 30% of beaches that are actually growing in size. The remainder, sort of 19% odd, are just not really moving. There has been a notable shift in the last 10, maybe 20 years. Normally, you would expect the number of beaches sort of growing and receding to be more or less in balance. Due to climate change, there's been quite a big shift. So we're seeing significantly more beaches eroding, exactly as you explained.
So when they erode from one location, when all the sand goes from one location, does it just sink to the bottom of the ocean or just move to another shore?
Most of the sand that you see on beaches is constantly in motion. So normally it is sort of, I wouldn't say rolling, but it's effectively sort of drifting very slowly up the coastline. And that's an ongoing process that's been, you know, happening for years. What happens when people put obstructions into the sea, say, for example, they build a pier or harbour, they can deflect sand that would otherwise have traveled up, you know, to further out into deeper water. And then the other way you can lose sand is through storms, because storms can come in and rip away sand. And if you get strong enough currents, those currents can again take the sand into deep water where it's lost. The way to think about this is sort of rivers, erosion on the shore, you know, big pebbles being broken up into small pebbles is all providing that sort of material. A majority of sediment actually comes down the rivers, particularly things like the Amazon River. Those are all providing a source of material for our beaches. You've then got the deep ocean is effectively like a sink. The challenge is to try to avoid that sediment from going too far out offshore so it's lost forever, is to keep it close to the shore. And then in those situations, and you know, and there's many islands and many case studies looking at this, where you have, for example, the Maldives, you may find the sand actually just moves, you know, the beach 1 year maybe more prominent on the north face, and then another year it may be on the more prominent on the southern face or on the eastern face. And the sand is, you know, routinely just kind of going on a trip around the island. The problem, though, is climate change, bigger waves are upsetting those patterns. And the big problem we've got at the moment is that since over the last sort of 30, 40 years, we've seen the wave climate increasing by about 0.4% per year on average, which isn't a lot. But when you accumulate that up, you're looking at 30, 40% increases in the overall wave energy in our oceans compared with when mid-19th century. And the result of that is it's changing a lot of things. Now, what's interesting is we're only starting to see the real effects of that in the last 10, 15 years. So where I've been in working in Mexico, they used to have beaches which were 30, 40 meters wide, and they're now 2 meters.
Wow.
They've lost a substantial amount of sand in literally 10 years.
So the climate change with the hurricanes and changes in where rain falls more now as against, you know, where they used to fall. So these things change how the storms change the waves change what is eroded from the sand. And that is the cycle that we are talking about.
Yes. And you've actually raised a very good point that I hadn't thought about. I mean, the changing rainfall patterns will also change the amount of erosion of the land and the in amount of sediment it actually adds into the system. You know, you would assume that maybe it would provide more sediment, but it's not necessarily the case. If the rivers are swollen and they're running very fast, they can take sediment far out into the sea when they eventually meet the sea, whereas perhaps historically it would have been much more gentle deposition of sand closer to the shore.
As these beaches erode, we have a favorite beach in Indiana Dunes, and this part, the sand literally was carved out. They had to build steps coming down from the sandbank to the beach, which was a few years back, was a gradual slope.
Yeah.
And they had to bring in humongous boulders to prop up the remaining sand wall, shall we say.
That's a common feature that's been repeated around the world. I mean, I've just come back from Israel, and they've got 45 kilometers of coastline where they've got big cliffs, I mean, 10, 20 meters high, that are just descending into the ocean through the erosion that you talk about. And it's fairly simple to think about. You know, when you get larger waves, they come towards the shore, they crash onto the shore. When they break, they unleash a huge amount of power. It's very difficult, or very unadvisable in many ways, to try to stop the crest of a wave. It can be moving quite fast and it contains a lot of energy. So what natural reefs do, and what we're trying to do is in trying to effectively simulate natural reefs, is they, by being out at sea, they're creating, you know, they're a bulge under the water. And as those waves come in, the energy beneath those waves gets channeled up towards the surface, which causes those waves to steepen and destabilize and then break. And if you can do that, you know, the crest of that wave is breaking onto the water, it effectively destroys itself. So by the time it then gets to the shore, it do all that much damage. And now the mistake that a lot of people make when they think about coastal protection is they, as you say, they go out and put these large boulders in. Now you can put the boulders along the shore, and that's almost like a last-ditch attempt, you know, defense against those waves. Because when those waves come in, they're going to just smash against those boulders. So what a lot of people now do is they put breakwaters further out to sea. Again, those are, you know, by putting them out to sea, you are, you know, those breaking waves are no longer, you know, anywhere near to the land. And you hope then behind these breakwaters, you'll see a buildup of sand, which is typically what happens. But what's often the mistake is that they build these structures so they go right through the surface and actually cut off all of the waves that are trying to reach the shore. And smaller waves very often are good. Not only do they help to circulate the water, but actually when you see smaller waves coming up to a beach and they break, they actually push sand onto the shore. So they actually help to build up I wouldn't say build up sand dunes, but they certainly build up some of the banks of sand on your beach.
So what would be a good solution for this beach, say, that we are talking about?
It's often a combination. If you've got really bad erosion already and you are, you know, say there's a building or sacred site or something in imminent danger, then you do need to actually reinforce the shore directly. Otherwise, what we're promoting are much more softer solutions. So you try to build something very similar to a coral reef, sort of 100, maybe 200 meters off from shore, and you affect a change in that wave climate before those waves reach the shore. Because once upon a time, those shores were perfectly okay. You know, the waves were in harmony with the existing shoreline. All that's changed is that we've just got more intense waves and we need to dampen those waves and get back to where we were. I mean, the only thing I would add to that, by the way, is that some shorelines have always been eroding. I mean, I don't know if you've been to London, or sorry, to England, but the White Cliffs of Dover, which are, you know, quite famous on the southern coast, they remain white because of constant erosion. Yeah, you know, so that's just a given. You know, that's mirrored in many other places in the world. And there are places where, you know, the beaches have been getting bigger and they've been effectively accumulating sand for a very long time. We need to be doing now is trying to just take off the slightly aggressive effects of the increased increased intensity of the bigger waves due to climate change.
So we have seen the coastal erosions happening at a faster scale than in history. What is your solution?
We seek to mimic natural coral reefs.
What are coral reefs?
Coral reefs are, it's hard to describe, they're sort of, kind of like a half animal, half plant. They're actually live, but they have algae growing within them, which is the plant element of them. And corals are, you know, there's a whole range. You know, it's a bit like the animal kingdom. There's a whole variety of different corals, everything from very hard sort of brain corals to I think what they're called sort of staghorn corals, which grow quite quickly but look a little bit like the horns of a reindeer, and everything in between. And what people often don't realize is there are warm water corals, there are also cold water corals. So there are corals around the UK which are in colder waters, but we more often think about the corals around Australia in the Great Barrier Reef. You know, those are, you know, stunning and incredible habitat for fish and marine life. Collectively, corals are excruciatingly, well, that's probably not the right word, but corals are extremely important for the life that we have. So they are responsible for providing a habitat for about 25% of all marine life. They're either born in or live in corals. It's estimated that there are around about a billion people's livelihoods are directly dependent on corals. And there are about 200 million, we estimate, of people who are directly protected by corals from, you know, larger waves. I've mentioned the Maldives Islands a couple of times, but, you know, large stretches of the Yucatan or Kintanaroo coastline are similarly sort of protected in that way. And in many ways, we treat corals a bit like air. You know, we all breathe air, we see it as a something that's just there, and we take it for granted. And corals have been quietly providing an awful lot of sort of services to mankind, and we've just taken them for granted. And sadly, without a significant change in the way that we are operating this world, we are likely to see about 90-95% of all corals killed off in the next 20 to 30 years.
Our family was visiting Hawaii one time, and they took us to a place where they had artificially created coral reefs with shipwrecks and some other submerged materials, man-made materials. So how do they start growing? If you said it's part animal, part plant.
Coral needs something solid to hold on to. So when you have a shipwreck or you have a piece of rock, you can take a section of coral and place them onto them. And corals are quite remarkable. They are a little bit like an iguana. If an iguana loses its tail, it regrows it very quickly. A coral, when it's cut or it fragments, the segment that remains will actually regrow quite rapidly. So what a lot of scientists are doing is after, say, a storm or where there's been some form of damage, they will collect up the fragments of those corals. They will bring them back to the lab and help to sort of nurture them back into a larger size or health. And then they will go out and find pieces of solid or rock or whatever down there to attach them on. They will regrow. What we do is we are installing essentially a dome structure in the ocean. That starts off as being made of steel, and then we use a process called electrolysis to actually, in a sense, harvest minerals that are naturally found in the seawater to form rock around our steel structure. So it effectively becomes covered in a layer of concrete. It's a completely natural concrete.
How quickly does this coral grow? Years? Decades?
Yeah, corals take